Okay, so this coming Shabbos is going to be a fight in shul, or at least there should be. there's a controversy about what haftarah to read this Shabbos. So just going to discuss a little bit. There's we read Achrei Mois last Shabbos. This week is Kedeshim. Kedeshim has a haftarah in the Chumash, but there's an interesting line in Shulchan Aruch about the haftarah of Kedeshim. It says in Sim Tav Chav Ches. The Rama writes, that's where the Shulchan Aruch talks about the Seder HaParashiyos and the Haftarahs. The Rama says that the general rule is every Shabbos you read a Haftarah, that's may end the Parasha. Every Parasha has its Haftarah. Whenever there's two Parashiyos together, Rama says, you always go with the Haftarah of the second Parasha. Except by Achrei Mois Kedeshim. So Achrei Mois Kedeshim, then instead of reading the Haftarah of Kedeshim, we read the Haftarah of Achrei Mois. And the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't give any explanation for why. It just says, this is the rule by all the others, but by Achrei Mois Kedeshim, we follow a different rule. We feel in the Darkei Moshe, every Ramah in Shulchan Aruch comes from the Ramah on the tour, which is the Darkei Moshe. And over there, he explains a little more. It comes from Gemara in Maseches Megillah. And the Mishnah at the end of Maseches Megillah, the end of the third parak of Maseches Megillah, is going through certain areas, certain parashiyos in Torah and in Navi that are a little bit objectionable and that we try to avoid. So there are some parashiyos that we avoid altogether, Enam Nikrim. There are some parashiyos that are Nikrim, but they're Enam Mitargamin. We read them, but we don't translate because we want to keep them like a low profile. Like the Mishnah over there discusses the mice of the eagle, the mice discusses the mice of David and Amnon in Navi. Certain stories that we don't really want to put out there so much. So at the end of that Mishnah, the last words of Rabbi Eliezer says that you can't be maftir with the parsha of Hoydas Yushalayim, which is a parak in Yecheskel. Hoydas Yushalayim is called Taya Biseha. The Navi Yecheskel is being very harsh against Yushalayim, and it says, declare the abominations of Yushalayim. And the mission says, "Rabbi Eliezer, Imer Imav Tirim Hoydas Yushalayim." And the Gemara brings a brisa where
what's the word Hoydas?
Hoyda. To like be my dia. Yeah. So the Gemara brings down a brisa which elaborates a little bit more, and it says that one time there was a Bal Kairei in Rabbi Eliezer's shul who read the haftarah of Hoydas Yushalayim. And Rabbi Eliezer responded and said, before you go declaring the abominations of Yushalayim, maybe we should go declare the abominations in your family. And then the Gemara says they examined his family and it turned out that there was a psul in his family. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't like the haftarah of Hodes Yushalayim because I'm sensitive for the covet of Yushalayim. That's what it's saying. That, sure, the Navi had a job to do, and the Yidden Yushalayim at that time were doing Averis, and the Navi came and gave a very, very strong Musar Shemuz. But when we read it in Shul now, 1,000 years later, so we're speaking negatively about Yushalayim, and Rabbi Eliezer says, I don't like to do that. L'maiser, Rabbi Eliezer is a Das Yachid in the Mishnah. The Tanakhama of the Mishnah has a list of haftaris that we avoid, and it doesn't include Hayyas Yushalayim. Rabbi Eliezer says, Eim of Tim Hayyas Yushalayim, Yachid Ram Halacha Karabim. So that means that really you're allowed to be mafti with such a haftarah. Now, you know, in those days, the Haftarah situation was more fluid. It was, you know, Shabbos after laning, they would have to choose a passage from Navi that they thought fit.
There was no art scroll.
So that's why you needed, you know, the Tanayim said, well, you have to stay from this parasha, stay from that parasha. Nowadays, we have an official Haftarah. Of course, there are, you know, as everybody sees, just looking in the Chumash, there are some parashas where it says that some kilos have such a minute, some kilos have such a minute, but within a little bit of leeway, we have more or less fixed what the haftaris are. The particular haftarah that Rabbi Eliezer and the Chum were arguing about, which is, I think, Yecheskel Perek Tezayin, is not one of the haftaris that we have. So even though we don't really pass like Rabbi Eliezer, but Lamaisa, we never chose that haftarah. Right? It will be mutter, but we never put that into the Chumash. But the haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim is pretty close to it. It's Yecheskel Chav Beis. It's six prakim later in Yecheskel, and it's got a pretty similar expression. By Hidvar Hashem Elai Lemar, this is the beginning of the Haftarah. By Tov Adam, Hashishpoit Hashishpoit Es Ir Hadamim, go to judgment against this bloody city, Vahidata is Koltai Avoiseha, and declare or notify it of all of its abominations. So it's not exactly the same expression, but it's quite a similar pasuk. It's just the kind of haftara that Rabbi Eliezer really, really didn't like, and the Chachamim didn't aser, and we pass like the Chachamim, so it's not aser, and there's material here that fits with Parshas Kedoshim, because it talks about Arayas, and Parshas Kedoshim is about Arayas, so when we look for a haftara, that's me and the Parsha, so that's what they chose. And they're allowed, because we don't pass like Rabbi Eliezer. But the Ramah is saying that at the same time, even though they're allowed, because we don't pass like Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Eliezer said something which really touches our hearts. Even though we don't pass like him, but the abominations of Yerushalayim, we have nothing better to talk about than the abominations of Yerushalayim. So, on the one hand, that's the Haftara, and we can't fight with a Masaira. On the other hand, we really don't like that Haftara. So what we do is we try to do whatever we can within the rules to avoid that haftara. So if it's Parshas Kedoshim, Parshas Kedoshim is Parshas Kedoshim, that's the haftara of Parshas Kedoshim, so there's no avoiding it. So you have to lane it. But when Achrim and Kedoshim falls out together, so then really we have choices. So ordinarily, when it's Bahar B'chukai, when it's V'yakab Kudei, the rule is you pick the second one. But either one would work. Just the usual rule is that you pick the second one. Over here, where since we have a choice, so the minig is that if we have Achrayim Kedoshim, we could do either one, so we do Achrayimai. And that way, we avoid the Haftar of Kedoshim.
And Achrayimai is so much more positive after I was talking about.
Right, the Haftar of Achrayimai is talking beautiful. So we prefer the Haftar of Achrayimai over the Haftar of Kedoshim. That's when they fall together, we read the Haftar of Achrayimai. So what happened this year? So what happened this year is that Lamaisa, they were separate. Achrayim Ois was last week. Kedoshim is this week. So if it's just Kedoshim, so it seems like it's unavoidable. But last week we didn't read the Haftar of Achrayim Ois because it was Machar Chodesh. So then there's a Shaila. It's not really talked about in any earlier Paiskim, but in Minhagim, there are different Minhagim. There are some that say, look, this week is Kedoshim. It's just Kedoshim. You have to read the Haftar of Kedoshim. And there are others that say that no, since lots of years we read the Haftar of Achrayim Ois, Alei Chivnei Kushim Atamli, we read that for Kedoshim, and this year we didn't read it yet, so let's read it this week. So that, and that's, in many shuls, that's what they do, that this week we're going to learn the Haftar of Achrayim Ois, even though it's really not Achrayim Ois. So that's so a little bit of a foreshadowing of what you have to look forward to.
There's no clear.
Right, that's why in many shuls you might have some people say, hey, that's the wrong haftara. No, that's the right haftara.
And the always go.
I don't know.
Well,
what is basketball?
Okay. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little bit about an inyan of Parshas Achrayim Ois, but a big inyan. It's an inyan that's always interesting. It says in Parshas Achrayim Ois, "Ushmartem es b'koysev es mishpatay es shayasa oisem ha'adam." Are you checking with after what the Arsul says for this Shabbos?
I want you with
the
Rabbi Arts.
Instructions.
My first name.
No, I know, but he doesn't say it. You've never heard of Rabbi Arts. Okay, see you
later.
We don't interrupt you.
Okay, so the. And the pasuk says you should observe all the mitzvahs, hashayasa oisem ha'adam v'chai bohem, and live by them. And that, of course, is a very, very famous drush of the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Pehei, learns from there, v'chai bohem v'lo yishayomus bohem, mikan l'pikuach nefesh adoich es ha'shabes. Pikuach nefesh is adoich ha'shabes, if Rachman al-Tzlan, there's an emergency, somebody has a heart attack, Rachman al-Tzlan, there's a car accident, somebody hit by a car. And to save his life, Hatzalah has to drive an ambulance. What?
Or limb. Or life or limb.
Right? No, that's a big machlokes. Whether we're machal Shabbos for Hatzalah's eiver, sakonas eiver, where there's no sakonas nefashis, but there's a sakonas eiver. There's a shach in Yeridei in Kufnun Zayin that says that we're machal Shabbos for that also. But the Magen Avraham argues on that. That's a big machlokes. Practically,
that's a little jump for a cut, so.
We're an Asian pigeon.
Okay, I'll put that discussion for another time. But
we should do that one, right?
Yeah, okay, maybe Mr. Shem. Sakana Sefer is a big discussion in Halacha. But Sakana Snafosh, that's for sure, it's Deich HaShabbos. And the Gemara in Yuma Pehe says that we learn it from B'chai Bahem. But that's really jumping straight to the end of the Gemara. The Gemara starts off that once upon a time there was a very dramatic walk down the street. There were a whole bunch of Tanoim that were taking a walk together. Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, were all taking a walk together. V'nishala sheila zeis b'fneihem. And this shaila came up. From where do we know the Pekuach Nefesh is Deich HaShabbos? And the Gemara says that each of those three Tanoim gave an answer. And I think there are more Tanoim. There are five answers that come up in the Braisa. And then after the whole Braisa is finished, the Gemara says that Shmuel, who was an Amori, he lived after all of these Tanoim. Shmuel says, I wish I was there. If I was there, I would have told them something that I think is very, very nice. V'chei Bahem teaches me V'leisha Yamus Bahem. And the Gemara then says that Shmuel is really the best of all the drushes, even though we don't like to say that for an Amir over 10 million. But the Gemara says it over there. Rava says that Shmuel is the best drusha because each of the others is a pircha, but Shmuel has no pircha. So that's the Maskana of the Gemara, and Shmuel is really brought down. And the Rambam, that seems to be accepted as the authoritative makar that Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos. We learn it from the Pasuk of Achai Bohem. But the Gemara seems to present it as if All the Tanoim before Shmuel, they couldn't come up with this great drasha. Shmuel's drasha is really better than theirs, and they all came up with an inferior drasha. Ad Shabbos Shmuel, and he took from B'chai Bahem. One of the five Tanoim is Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael gave a different drasha. We won't go into it, but just B'kitzer, he said we learn a Kal V'chomer from Machteres, just like when somebody's Baba Machteres, that means there's an intruder in the house, a home invasion, the Torah gives you permission to kill him, because it's potentially a pikuach nefesh for you. So if pikuach nefesh is deicha that, pikuach nefesh is deicha all the mitzvahs of the Torah. That was Rabbi Shmuel's drasha. Rabbi Kiva learned from another one. Rabbi Elazar learned from another one. Shmuel learned from B'chai Bahem. The kasha is Rabbi Yishmael, and again the Gemara says that Shmuel's was the best drasha. So it seems that Rabbi Yishmael couldn't think of Shmuel's drasha. The problem is that Rabbi Yishmael himself, who is on record elsewhere as learning the head of Pekuach Nefesh from V'chai Bahem, right? And Rabbi Shmuel again is like 200 years before Shmuel. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin Dafayin Dalid, it says that the Gemara over there is discussing the Shalish Chamurah, Abu Dazar Gil Rai Shvich Hazdamim, where we hold that Pekuach Nefesh is not Deicha, right? We say Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha almost everything, but not those three Aveiris, Abu Dazar Gil Rai Shvich Hazdamim. Rabbi Shmuel argues, it's not so well known, Rabbi Shmuel holds that Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha everything, even Avodah Zarah. If the Goyim come to a Yid and they say that if you don't worship this Avodah Zarah, you don't bow down to this idol, we're going to kill you. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Minayin le Pekuach Nefesh Deicha, Minayin that Kesha'imrim loy Avodah Zarah or Nara Goyscha, Minayin that you're supposed to bow down to the Avodah Zarah, Shenemar V'chai Bohem. Rabbi Shmuel learns from V'chai Bahem that Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha everything, even Avodah Zarah. Here in Yuma, we're looking for a Makar that Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos, which is less controversial than Avodah Zarah. And he made a Kal V'chomer from Machteres, but the Gemara ends up saying that V'chai Bahem is a better drasha. He seemingly didn't think of the drasha of V'chai Bahem. So the Mefarshim are bothered, why didn't Rabbi Yishmael, who said the drasha of V'chai Bahem in Sanhedrin regarding Avodah Zarah, why couldn't he think of the drasha of V'chai Bahem when it came to the discussion of Pekuach Nefesh Deicha HaShabbos? And this kasha, so there's a lot of Mefarshim, it's the kasha, but it's the best known from the Tosfos Yom Kippurim. Who is the Tosfos Yom Kippurim? So he is, okay, he's better known as the Kapis Tamarim. There's a little bit of a story behind
There's a Tosfos Yom Tov and there's a Tosfos Yom Kippur.
Right. So he's a man with many names. He has three svarim. I mean, really, he has more svarim, but he has a series of three svarim on Rosh Hashanah, Yuma, and Sukkah. His sefer on Maseches Rosh Hashanah is called Yom Trua. His Sefer on Maseches Yuma, parts of Maseches Yuma, each one is on parts of the Maseches, is called Tosfos Yom Kippurim. And his Sefer on Maseches Sukkah is called the Kapis Tamarim. The Kapis Tamarim is the most well-known, yeah. So he's usually referred to as the Kapis Tamarim. Ironically, if you're looking for his Sefer on the shelf, so, you know, you might, you're looking alphabetically, you're looking under Yud for Yom Shura, or under Chaf for Kapis Tamarim, or under Tuf for Tosfos Yom Kippurim, you're not going to find it. It's under Shin. Because when these three Svarim were put together and published, it came under the title Shemos Ba'aretz. Now, nobody ever referred to him as the Shemos Ba'aretz, but the outside of the Sefer says Shemos Ba'aretz. I think the newer ones already call it, say, on the outside copies tomorrow. But the older editions, on the outside of the Sefer, says Shemos Ba'aretz because it was a collection of a bunch of titles. So Shemos Ba'aretz, they thought, was a cute title for a collection of titles. So it's called Shemos Ba'aretz. This Sefer, there's a very interesting story behind these Svarim. This Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib, who was a tremendous Pesach, he has other Svarim in Halacha, but these are his three Svarim on Gemara. He came from the community in Turkey. He lived in the 1600s when Yerushalayim was, or Eretz Yisrael was part of the Ottoman Empire. There was a lot of back and forth between the community in Turkey and in Eretz Yisrael. He was a Turkish Jew who had emigrated to Eretz Yisrael. He had a yeshiva there. His yeshiva was fully funded by a yid named Rav Moshe Ibn Ya'ish, I think. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Ya'ish. Who lived in Constantinople, and he was a rich man, and he supported a yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and this Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib was the head of the yeshiva. So, you know, if you have a big supporter, you have to sometimes give him something nice. You know, you make a dinner, he's the guest of honor, you give him a plaque. Sometimes plaques aren't good enough, you give him a Kosher Eliyahu. You know, in the recent mirror dinner a few weeks ago, the Kosher Eliyahu was also not good enough. So there were two guests of honor. Each one was given a Sefer Torah at the mirror dinner. So what did Rav Moshe Ibn Chabib do for his guest of honor? Is this person who was the patron of the whole yeshiva? So he wrote Chiddush Torah on the Masechta that they were learning, and he sent it as a personal gift to this yid in Constantinople, this Rav Moshe Ibn Ayish. Ya'ish. He sent these three Svarim. One was, I think, in 1684, one in 1685, and one in 1686. Each one he wrote that year, the yeshiva learned that Masechta. He wrote up his Chidushim on the Masechta, and he sent it as a personal gift, not for publication. He sent it to this Rav Moshe Ibn Ya'ish for him to learn it and to enjoy it and to have it on his shelf. That was his gift for him, to thank him for his support of his yeshiva. It wasn't published until about 50 years later, in the 1700s. An interesting postscript to this, when it was published, so the Pnei Yeshua was in the middle of writing his sefer. The Pnei Yeshua, you know, wrote on many Masechtas of Shas, and he's better known, a classic Lomnisha sefer on many Masechtas. He writes that when he was doing Masechtas Sukkah, and he got up to Perek Lulav HaGazal, so the Sefer Kapis Tamarim came out at that time. And he got a hold of the Sefer, and he looked through it, and he saw he has very little to add. So he writes very little on the rest of Masechta Sukkah, because he says, like, the Kabbalists won't put me out of business. Huh? What can I say after, when there's such a Sefer available? Mm-hmm. Just learn him. Anyway, so we'll call him the Kabbalist tomorrow, but this is in his Pirush on Yuma, which is officially called Tosfos Yom Kippurim, unless you want to call it the Shemos Ba'aretz. So he asks this Kasha. He asks, why is Rabbi Yishmael searching high and low to find the Makar B'Kuch Nevesh Derech HaShabbos? He has to make a Kal V'Chaymer from Machteres. Why couldn't he think of a Chaybahem like Shmuel did? If he himself, in Masechet Sanhedrin, when he was learning B'Kuch Nevesh Derech HaAvodah of all things, he learned it from V'Chaybahem. So why couldn't he learn this from V'Chaybahem? So to answer this Kasha, the Tosfos Yom Kippurim makes a very interesting distinction between the two Gemaras, the two cases. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it says that the guy, if a guy comes over and says, bow down to this idol or else I'll kill you. So Rabbi Shmuel says, you're allowed to bow down to the idol to save your life. So whose life are you saving in that scenario? Your own life. Right? The guy comes over and says, I'll kill you if you don't do this Aveira. So you do the Aveira to save your own life. The Gemara in Yuma, right, that's the Hatzalah Gemara. Pekuach Nevesh Derech HaShabbos, the description in the mission is Mefakchen Es Hagal. Right, that means that a building collapsed and there are hopefully survivors in the rubble. And Mefakhen HaSagal means that you're allowed to go through the rubble, even though that's going to involve malachas, you're allowed to go through the rubble to find the survivors. That's our example of pikuach nefesh doiches haShabbos. That's the pikuach of someone else's nefesh. The people in the rubble. The guy on the outside is putting aside his Shabbos. He's being doiches haShabbos to save the life of the people in the rubble. So the Tosafot Yom Kippurim says that's already a much bigger chiddush. That pikuach nefesh or hatzolath someone else's nefesh is doiches haShabbos. That's a bigger chiddush. Rabbi Shmuel held that from V'chai Bahem we could learn that my nefesh is deichem my mitzvahs, but that someone else's nefesh is deichem my mitzvahs, that I don't think I could see from B'chai Bahem. So, but he said I could see that from Machteres, so from Machteres he was able to learn that. So Shmuel came along, Shmuel said that no, from B'chai Bahem we can learn that also. So therefore, ultimately, lahalacha, nothing's changing. Lahalacha, everyone's nefesh is deichem Shabbos, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos even for somebody else's nefesh, no question about it. But Rabbi Shmuel didn't think you could learn that from B'chai Bahem. Yes, he made the drasha of V'chai Bahem, but only for his own nefesh, not for someone else's nefesh. Now, that's the chiluk that Tosafot Yom Kippurim says.
Would this be forget
that it's a sooner bigger, be
to save somebody else's life is more yeah than your own life?
Okay, so great question. So I want to try to understand a little bit better. What's the lumnus? What is this when the Tosafot Yom Kippurim says that there's a makom lechalik? Again, not that he's being mechalik lahalacha, but there's a makom lechalik between your own nefesh and someone else's nefesh. What he's really touching on, I think, is a very deep question in the halacha of pikuach nefesh. That which we pass in that pikuach nefesh is doicha Shabbos. So how are we supposed to understand this? There's two ways, and it's a little bit of a complicated hakira. I'm going to introduce it with a mashal. Let's say you have a worker, right? A worker is, right, you have an employee with an employer, and the employee is supposed to be following instructions, doing what the employer tells him to, and to go, you know, and then, you know, sometimes, so we're going to explore where, when, under what circumstances could he take time away from working for the employer? So let's say he was sent on a job, right? You're supposed to get in your car and drive to, let's say, you know, he's a lawyer, he works for a law firm, go drive to the courthouse and take care of some business over there. Now, obviously, if along the way, and he's being paid for this time, he's working for the firm, if during this time he decides that he's going to stop and go for a movie and then continue on his way to the law firm, so that's obviously not allowed. Now, let's say along the way, he sees a good business opportunity for the firm. He sees an accident. Right? Lawyers love accidents. He sees an accident. So he figures, you know, well, let me run over and see if anyone needs a lawyer. So that's something he's taking time away. His instructions were go to the courthouse. Over here, he's taking time away from going to the courthouse, but that's allowed, right? The employer won't mind because that's better for the employer. He was just going to take care of some clerical work. But if he goes to the accident scene, he'll bring in some new cases. So that's great. Now, right, so the first thing, to go stop for a movie, that's awesome. To go stop for, go to the accident scene to see if you can get new business, that's mutter. Now, how about if along the way he needs to stop because he needs a coffee, or he's really thirsty, wants to buy a bottle of water, or he has to go to the bathroom. So it's probably reasonable to suppose that that's also allowed, right? He would be allowed to do that. So we have two cases where he's allowed. But there's a difference between the two cases. The first case is, he's working for the employer. He's got to do what's in the best interest of the employer under all circumstances. And even though the employer told him to go to the courthouse, but over here, we decided that it's in the best interest of the employer if he goes to the accident scene. So that's mutter because that's the best interest of the employer. When it comes to getting the coffee or going to the bathroom, the reason why we say that's mutter is not because it's in the best interest of the employer. The employer doesn't need that he should get his coffee. He should really just go to the courthouse. But the employer doesn't need to micromanage him so totally. Yeah, you work for him. You're supposed to be doing what's in his best interest, but up to a degree, right? You're allowed to, you have your own self-interest also. And there's a line of, you know, up to what point do you have to sacrifice your own self-interest for the bosses. So not to stop on the way to go to a movie, that's reasonable. That you have to sacrifice your own self-interest for the bosses. Now you're working for him, you can't go for a movie on his time. To stop and get a coffee, that's your own self-interest, but we think that's permitted, right? It's mistabra that that's permitted, even though you're working for the boss now, you're allowed to take a little bit away from his interests to pursue your own interests up to a degree. If the Torah says, I want you to keep my mitzvahs, keep Shabbos, do all the mitzvahs, right? Stay away from Averis, don't eat machalas asurais. And then there's the din of pikuach nefesh. So is the heter of pikuach nefesh similar to the lawyer going to the accident scene? Or is it similar to him going to stop for a coffee? Tzad number one is similar to going to the accident scene, meaning under all circumstances, we just want to do the ratzon habayrei. Whatever is in Hashem's best interest. Hashem said, keep Shabbos. Okay, that's in his best interest. But then Hashem also said, you know what? A nefesh achas mi Yisrael is so chashuv to me that preserving a nefesh mi Yisrael, that's more important than keeping Shabbos. So we, under all circumstances, we just want to do the ratzon habayrei. But the heter pikuach nefesh tells me that the ratzon habayrei is that the nefesh achas mi Yisrael takes priority over Shabbos. That's, I would say, probably the classic or the conventional understanding of the din of pikuach nefesh. The other pshat, which is maybe a little bit of a more controversial pshat, is that what it is a limitation on the degree to which we have to be mevatel ourselves to the ratzon habayrei. Yeah, there's a ratzon habayrei. I'm like, right, I'm a yid. I was mekabel Torah Harsinai. I consider myself the eved of Hashem, but a person has his own self interest also. Now, the Mishnah always tells us, of course, you have to be mevatel your ratzon in front of, you know, before Hashem's ratzon. Okay, but maybe that's up to a degree. If my, you know, if Hashem's ratzon interferes with my interests, my wants, my conveniences, I have to set all of that aside for Hashem's ratzon. If Hashem's ratzon interferes with my life, maybe Hashem never demanded that I give him loyalty, even to the degree where it interferes with my life. Now, obviously, it all comes back to the ratzon habayrei because he could decide to what degree he's demanding, and if he would say, I do demand it, then we would have to. But that which he didn't demand it, and he allowed us to preserve our lives, maybe that's because that's like going for a coffee. You could do what's best for you now. Hashem's ratzon is Shabbos, you know, all the mitzvahs of the Torah. But a person has ratzon is also. And when it comes to your life, you don't have to be mevatel your ratzon because of Hashem's ratzon. Hashem says, I want you to be mevatel your ratzon up to the point of a life. But to save your life, that already you can keep, because I'm not demanding that degree of loyalty. At that point, I'm allowing you to pursue your own ratzon. That's like the worker that goes for the coffee. He's allowed, but not because that's in the employer's best interest, but because to that degree, he's allowed to pursue his own interests, even on the boss's time. So when it comes to pikuach nefesh, we're allowed to pursue our own interests, even on the boss's time. We're always on the Rabbeinu Shlom's time. He's our boss. But we're allowed to keep ourselves alive, and then after that, follow all of Hashem's commandments. That's two very different approaches to the heter pikuach nefesh. One big nafkamina between them is, does the heter pikuach nefesh only apply to my life or also to other people's lives? If it's because the ratzon habayrei, Hashem's self-interest, so to speak, in his scale of values, a nefesh achas mi Yisrael is more chashuv than a mitzvah, then it doesn't matter if it's my nefesh or someone else's nefesh, it's preserving a nefesh. But if the heter pikuach nefesh is because I don't have to listen to Hashem now because it's too much of an infringement on my ratzon, so it's all about me. It has to be my life. If it's my life, then we could say that my interest in self-preservation takes priority. Hashem didn't demand my loyalty even if I'm going to lose my life for it. But that's only negated to my life. The limitation on the loyalty because it interferes with my own self-interest is only negated to my life. Once it's somebody else's life, so there's no self-interest here. It's just a question of which is a better, more worthy thing to do. So that has to come from the Rebbeinu Shlalom. So that's what the Tais Yom Kippur is really getting at. The Rabbi Shmuel held that V'chai Bahem would teach us a heter pikuach nefesh that's defined by self-interest. That Hashem doesn't demand our loyalty at the cost of giving up our lives. So so when it came to pikuach nefesh, deichas Shabbos, mafakin sagal, meaning even somebody else's nefesh, he had to find a different makar. He learned that from Machteres. Shmuel came along and said, no, we can learn that from V'chai Bahem also. So ultimately, the maskana, V'chai Behem does teach us that a Nefesh Achas Mi'Yisrael is a higher value in Hashem's scale of values than the mitzvah of Shabbos. But Rabbi Shmuel wasn't learning that from V'chai Behem. What he was learning from V'chai Behem was that Hashem doesn't demand our loyalty even to the point of giving up our lives.
So going to Rabbi Shmuel, it's an option? When he says B'chai Behem, I deserve.
Right, B'chai Behem, according to him, that's a very good Ha'ara. There's another very big Shailer, I'm Machlekes Rishonim, Kayadua, about, you know, when you're not obligated to give up your life, does that mean you're not allowed? That's the Rambam Shita, or does it mean that it's optional? It's a Taisan of a Dezara, and very likely that Machlaikis could be related to this Chakira also. But I'm not going to go there in this year, but yeah, that's L'chaira, good Sushtel. I will go where I wanted to take this. Is a very interesting Tosfos in Sanhedrin that talks about a question. This is Sanhedrin Ayin Dal. That's really the main headquarters for the whole sugya of Pikuach Nefesh, and especially of the Shalish Chamurais. Tosfos over there discusses that which we know that Pikuach Nefesh, we learn from V'chai Behem that Pikuach Nefesh is Doich HaShabbos. What would be if we didn't have any Pesachim? So I think the parsha we would say, you know, I started off with the Gemara and Yuma that we learned from B'chai Behem that Pekuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos. If I didn't have B'chai Behem, I would think that it's not Deicha. That you can't, you know, the Torah says you have to keep Shabbos, so under all circumstances, you always have to keep Shabbos. Taisus says maybe, meaning that would mean the Muskel Rishon. Muskel Rishon means what would I think if we were just applying our own thought to it without any input from the Torah. So the Muskel Rishon would be that you always have to sacrifice your life for Hashem's Torah. V'chai Behem is machadesh, that you're allowed to keep yourself alive. Mm-hmm. But Tosfos says, it could be there's another possibility. It could be that, because Tosfos has a kasha, the Gemara discusses whether Ben Noyach has to give up his life for the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noyach. And Tosfos says, well, Ben Noyach has no V'chai Behem. So because V'chai Behem is written in Parshas Zachareimah, it says no Shaitz to the B'nei Noyach. So why is there even a tzad that a ben noyach is allowed to violate one of the mitzvahs to keep himself alive? It doesn't say b'chai behem, so Tosfos, but by ben noyach. So Tosfos says it could be that it's really all the other way around. Really, the muskel rishon is that you never have to sacrifice your life for the mitzvahs of the Torah. You have to keep the mitzvahs of the Torah if you can. If you can't, then you don't. Even if you're going to die for it, then you can't. Then you don't have to. That's the muskel rishon. The only reason why I need a V'chai Behem is because there is a pasuk that tells me that Shvichas Damim and Gilui Arayos, you have to sacrifice your life. Once I have a pasuk by Avodah Zarah, I'm sorry, by Shvichas Damim and Gilui Arayos, then you would have thought to learn the other mitzvahs from there. So now I need V'chai Behem to tell me not to learn from there. So Tosfos is saying that we have two tzadim about what was the Muskel Rishon. Is the din that Pikuach Nefesh Deicha Shabbos a chiddush that I needed a pasuk for? Or is it really a svar pshuta, and I only needed the pasuk so that I shouldn't learn the contrary from a different pasuk? So is the head of Pikuach Nefesh a svar pshuta, a muskel rishon, or is it a chiddush? So I think I would say, according to the conventional understanding, that Pikuach Nefesh is that the idea of Pikuach Nefesh is that a nefesh achas miyisrael is a higher value than the mitzvahs of the Torah. It would seem to me that you can't possibly say that we would know that misvara. If it's all about, in the eyes of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, which is a higher value, so you need nevuah to know what Hashem wants. And all we have is what he tells us. And he told us about the mitzvahs of the Torah. If he never told us that a nefesh achas miyisrael is more chashuv to him than the mitzvahs of the Torah, then we wouldn't be able to make that up on our own. So to say that the Het of Pikuach Nefesh is a svara makes much more sense, I think, with the other tzad, that it's a limitation on, you know, Hashem said, keep the mitzvah of the Torah, and maybe it was mistaber to Chazal that meant up to a degree, keep the mitzvah of the Torah if you can. If you can't, then he never meant that you have to, even if you're going to lose your life for it. If it's a svara of self-preservation, a limitation on how much loyalty the Rebbeinu Shlomo demanded, I think it's still a little bit debatable, but then I could hear it sad that Chazal would consider that at least an open question, misvara. But if it's because it's a greater value in the eyes of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, that should have to come from a positive. Where else could we learn the values of the in the eyes of the Rebbeinu Shlomo? So this chakira of the Taisan Sanhedrin could also be related to this chakira that we're firing.
Okay. Bichlal, what's the happy minute that the Noach should be mechuyev to give their lives? I mean, where their chiyuv comes from? Where? Bichlal in the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach.
Well, the Ish the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach is learned from Pesukim. But you mean when you say where does their chiyuv come from? You mean they that don't have the Pesukim, they right. Don't learn the Torah.
They don't learn the Torah.
So right, so they seemingly they're expected to know it misvara.
So if it's misvara,
then what would that tell us about? That's a good hara. I don't know. We'll have to think about that.
Besides the three cardinal sins that you have to kill yourself for,
yeah,
there are two other ones as well. If it's b'parasya and if it's b'zman
shmat, that's right.
So why don't we take those two and use b'chaybem? How do we know that those two should go with the three?
Let's use b'chaybem. It's not exactly that. It's three plus two. It's three and then all the other mitzvahs of the Torah, but in all the other mitzvahs of the Torah, it depends on circumstances. And under those two circumstances, when it's for Hesia and Lahavir Aldas, and when it's Shmad, right, then you have to be Meister Nefesh even for the other mitzvahs of the Torah.
How do we know that?
So that's a good question. Where does the Gemara doesn't say, if I remember correctly, the Gemara doesn't learn that from a pasuk. The Gemara says that misvara, I think. It's a good question. Why? I don't know. We have to take a look at that Gemara and
try
to figure out.
At the same time, you're working on his.
Okay, returning to the opening question, right? The question that the Kavos Tamarim asked, why Rabbi Shmuel couldn't think of a Chai Bahem when he was thinking about Pekuach Nefesh Neichas Shabbos. If he himself said Chai Bahem for a different halacha, for Pekuach Nefesh Neichas Avodah Zarah, and that's an even bigger chiddush, why couldn't he think of a Chai Bahem when he was thinking about Pekuach Nefesh Neichas Shabbos? So there's a second teretz from the Menchas Chinuch, which also is a very fundamental nekuda, a chiluk that he makes, which has ramifications in a lot of different areas of halacha. In the area of Pekuach Nefesh, certainly, but also some aspects in business law and Dinei Mamonis, and if we have time to it, we'll see even in Hilchos Brachos. We wouldn't expect to get over there. But the Mechsinach wants to suggest as follows. He says there's a difference between two different kinds of Einsim. What are the actual cases? Just to review the cases of the two Gemaras. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is that a guy came over and said, bow down to this idol or I'm going to kill you. So that's what we call the case of the Anas. Right? Someone who's being ma'anes him. He's a hoodlum, a thug, right? Who comes over and says, do this or I'll kill you. The case of Pekuach Nefesh in the Gemara in Yuma is mafakhen asagal. There's no thug over there. There's a natural disaster. There's a wreck, right? A house that fell in. And we're going through the rubble, and other examples of that, where we learn from there are the heart attack, the accident, the illness. In all those cases, there's no anas, there's a chayli or an accent or something like that. So the Menchas Chinuch says there's a big difference between those two different kinds of cases, even though they both wind up being an oines, they both wind up being a choice between your life and the mitzvah, but there's a basis to view them very differently. And he brings the halacha. I don't remember which one now he brings. There's two halachas in Chosha Mishpat that different mafarshim bring to illustrate this. So there's a halacha as follows. In Simin Reish Hey in Chosha Mishpat, it talks about the halacha of Talyuhu V'Zavin versus Talyuhu V'Yahiv. Talyuhu V'Yahiv, Loyev Matanase Matana. What does that mean? If somebody comes over to you and says, I demand that you give me that, your car. Now, what do we call that? That's a thief, right? He comes over with a gun and he says that, give me your car or I'll kill you. The Gemara has a much gentler case. He locks you up in a room and he holds the key on the outside and he says, give me the car or I'll kill you. Give me the car, he's gentle. He says, give me the car or I'm leaving and you're never going to come out of this room. That's Tolyu, right? He hung him up in a tree. And the Gemara discusses whether, obviously the discussion is not about whether this is a nice way to behave. The discussion is about the kinyan. Is he kinyan under those circumstances? Again, he's not an Erel Chiyid, he's not asking any shilas, but it's very negayah to the next guy. The one that wants to buy it from the car thief, is it really his? Does he have a bailus on it? Could he sell it or not? So the Gemara says that the Gemara makes distinctions. If he did pay money, that's till you of his oven, then the kinyan is chal. But if he didn't pay money, that's the case that we're talking about, where he took it for, he just forced you to give it as a quote unquote gift, so then the kinyan is not chal. So even though ultimately you give it, when I say give it, meaning we're not talking about where he just holds you up at gunpoint and takes your car, then obviously there's no ice kinyan, it's not his. But what he does is, at gunpoint, or locking you in the room, his demand is that you make a Maisa Kinyan. You sign over the papers, you go through a Maisa Kinyan with him, so that he should have a proper Maisa Kinyan, and you did it, but you only did it because he was going to kill you otherwise. Now, halacha is, it's not chal.
Even though it's like Shchemara, about to die.
Even so, right? No, it's not chal.
It's not Vom Shebelev?
It is, right. But even so, because it's not considered das, there's no das on this kinyan, right? It's under duress, there's no das on this kinyan. So a kinyan ba'ayinis, a matana ba'ayinis is not chal. The Ramah says, but you could have a case that's very, very similar. This is at the end of Simon Reish. Hey, you could have a case that's that is sort of mathematically similar, but conceptually very differently, very different. Let's say you have a guy who the guy came into his house and he's just on a rampage. He starts breaking windows and terrorizing you and your family, and you need to get rid of him. You ask him to leave, he's not willing to leave, and he's just terrorizing the family. So you're afraid something might happen. Maybe he's gonna kill someone. You don't know what he's gonna do. So you come up with an idea. You say, I have a car. I'll give you my car. Will you leave if I give you my car? He goes, yeah, I'll leave if you give me my car. So you give him the car, you make him a kinyan, you sign it over to him. He's kinyan. Yeah, you only did it because you were afraid that you'll get killed otherwise. So, and yet, in that case, the kinyan is chal. In the first case, the kinyan is not chal. What's the difference between the two cases? So there's... So the way that Achrayim explain it, is if you think of an intermediary case...
It's a grumma.
What do you mean by grumma?
In the first case, he said, give me this, so I'm going to kill you.
Right.
In the second case, he didn't tell you that. You gave him an option. You said, I'll give you this if you leave me alone.
Right, and he didn't tell it to you. That's the key thing. Who initiated? Whose idea was the car? Why should that make a chilek agave the kinyan being chal? In either case, the only reason I did it was because I thought that if I don't do it, I'm going to die.
Right.
And so, you know, is that good ratzon or is that not good ratzon? So the answer is that the fact that you only did it because otherwise you were going to die, that doesn't make it an oines. The fact that you did this kinyan because you had very bleak alternatives, that happens all the time. I mean, every time, you know, a person decides to sell something, a person has a prized possession, a family heirloom, he would never want to sell it, but now he's making a chassan, and he has no money, so he has to sell it. He's an oines. If he wasn't making the chassan, if he didn't need the money, he never would have sold it. But, you know, that's life. We always make decisions based on the pros and cons. We might not be happy to sell it, but if it's, you know, if the pros outweigh the cons, so we'll sell it. So here, this guy who's selling, he's giving him a ton of, he's giving the matana so that he could preserve his family or his life, so that he decided that it's a good idea. But it was his decision. So as long as he's the one that thought of it, so we could call it his decision, and even though he only decided because he had very, very lousy alternatives, that doesn't make it an oines, because no one else made this happen. He's the one that made it happen. When the thug... And he said, give me the car or else I'll kill you. So you're just following his orders, because he'll kill you if you don't. So you're forced into following his orders. So that's not considered your das. You're not really exercising any autonomy in doing that. You're just doing what someone else made you do. So then that's his das, not your das. So that's considered an oines in the das. Meaning there you don't have das for that kinyan. Because there it's like he took it without your das. in the case where you did it to save your life, but it was your idea, of course, it's still not a happy choice that you made, but there it's considered your das. Because you initiated the idea of giving him the car. So even if
there's yiyush, in the first case where the other guy initiated it,
yeah.
Look, I'm never going to get this back. Forget it. He's miyayush from it.
Right, yish doesn't help for him. Yish might help for the next party.
So even in that first case with the other guy initiated, if this guy's miyayish from it, then you can be kind of.
Okay, I hear. That gets involved in a big sugya. But what we're interested in now really is about whether this mice opinion was chal or not. Because that's what's going to get for our chilah. There's another place where this comes up in Chayshim Mishpat, Legave Halachis of Moiser. This is in Siman Shin Pei Ches, at the end of Chayshim Mishpat. So there's very strict rules against being Moiser Mamun Chaveiro Lamalchus, that you're not allowed to. It's talking over there about a Malchus that, you know, just wants to, you know, wants to take away somebody's property. So if the so it's a big Aveira, and certainly in Mamunis, the person is always Chayav. If he's Moisim Mamun Chaveira Lamalchus, if the Malchus comes around and you say, hey, that guy has some property that you'd like, that you would probably want to take away, so the Moisir is Chayav to pay for that. Let's say the Malchus came to me and said, I need information. I need to figure out how to get my hands on so and so's property. I say I don't want to participate. I don't want to be a meister. If you don't do it, we're gonna take away all of your property. So then I'm allowed. And then the halacha is I'm allowed, and I don't have to pay him for it. The malchus came after his property, and they threatened me that they're gonna take away all my property if I don't. Or they're gonna penalize me. If I don't give it to them, then
just to save your own stuff,
right?
You're just next. If that happens. Right?
Okay.
For yours.
Okay. 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 Right. I hear. Maybe it's not advisable, but this is the halacha. I wouldn't say this. Oh, so let me bring in a second case first, and then we'll show the contrast. On the other hand, if they come to me and they say, "Tanaman, we want your property. We're taking this away," and I say, "Oh my gosh. No, don't take mine. Let me show you my neighbor's. He's got something much better." And I go and I show them his property to save my own. So they take away his property to save my own. There, I'm absolutely chayev. There, I was not allowed to do that. And if I do it, I'm chayev b'tashlum, and I have to pay him the full value of everything that they take away. Plus, I have all the curses that we say about a meister, a master. In the second case, where they came from my property and I saved my property by giving them his, I'm chayev. In the first case, where they came for his property and they threatened to take mine as a penalty if I don't give them his, then I'm not considered a meister. What's the difference between the two? The difference, again, is who said I want Pliny's property? If they came for Pliny's property and said, we'll punish you if you don't do it, so it's really them coercing me to do it. In the second case, where they came from our property and I saved it by going and giving them theirs, nobody coerced me to give them their property. I did it because it was advantageous for me. I could save my own property. Of course, the calculus was the same in both cases. It was, I saw before myself a choice. It's either my money or his money, and I'd rather they get his money. And that was my calculation in both cases. But when they came for his money, it's called their mysa. I didn't do anything. I just didn't go and sacrifice myself for him, but I allowed them to take his money. It was them taking it. But in the second case, it's really me doing it because they never said they wanted his money. If I initiated the idea, so then that's considered my maisa, that's much worse. So then I'm considered a maisa and I'm chayav. So coming back, so the Mechas Chinuch says, when you have the case of the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is a pikuach nefesh, I'm sorry, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, I keep on saying Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, about Avodah Zarah. But it could have been any Avera. The Gemara over there was talking about where there was an Anas who said, bow down to the idol or I'll kill you. So I bow down to the idol. Whose mice is that? Who made me bow down to the idol? I didn't really do it. He made me do it. I did it because he was going to kill me otherwise. He made me do it. So that's much easier to call an Aines. Much easier to be Matir. I didn't really have any rutzin in that. But the case of Mafakhenes Hagal, I see a Gaul, or a person has a heart attack. I see a Chayle who's going to die. I'm thinking to myself, what should I do? What should I do? I could be Mechal Shabbos. That'll help. So who told me to be Mechal Shabbos? Nobody told me to be Mechal Shabbos. I decided that I want to be Mechal Shabbos to save his life. Who says that you're allowed? Who says that Chil Shabbos, that saving a life is more important than Chil Shabbos? That needs a much bigger heter. The first case, I didn't really do anything. I was letting him make me. He did it. So there, over there where there's an anatz, it follows from these 12 lachas and chayish and mishpat that's easier to be matir because that's not my mice at all. So that's where Rabbi Shmuel darshed in the v'chay b'hem for the case where there was an anatz. He said, yeah, that's the simple hatter from v'chay b'hem. But from v'chay b'hem, that's a much bigger chiddush. Rabbi Shmuel didn't learn that from v'chay b'hem. He learned it from achteretz. Shmuel eventually learned it from v'chay b'hem. Again, we shouldn't be left with any confusion. Halacha l'maisa avada, it's mutter. But the Mechitz Chinuch is just telling us it's a much bigger chiddush, and that's why Rabbi Shmuel needed a different makar for that.
Lagabi
Avodah Zarah, there Rabbi Shmuel holds his mutter. Right, Rabbi Shmuel holds his mutter, or the other Tanai Master. That which everybody grows up thinking there's three Averis that you have to be Meisir Nefesh, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't hold like that. Rabbi Shmuel says that even for Avodah Zarah, he learns it from Mechai Bahem. He says we learned that from Mechai Bahem, and he doesn't agree with the drasha of Ahavta Hashem Alekecha that teaches us that Avodah Zarah is different. That the other Tanayim Darshan,
so
that
is
right?
No, so there is no three.
Right, right. According to Mishmael. So it's a little bit questionable to see what does he say about the other two. That's not clear. There's a discussion in the Leinu Mefarshim. All right, so the last Sushtel, so I said this is going to have an effect on Hilchos Brachos. There's in Ur Chaim, what's the name? Is this? I think Reish Dalid. There's two consecutive halachas in Shulchan Aruch. One is in Sifches, one is in Siftes. Start with what it says in Siftes. If a person needs to eat macholis asurais to save his life, so of course we know you're allowed to do that, right? You're allowed to, right? Or a simpler example, he needs to eat on Yom Kippur, right? You have a chaylu who can't fast on Yom Kippur, so he needs to eat. Yeah, that's a more shechichik example. It's not so common that a person needs dafka macholis asurais, but the Pesim talk about that case also. He needs to eat something aser to save his life, or he needs to eat on Yom Kippur to save his life. So of course he's allowed to. That's not what's being discussed in Siman Reish Dalin in Arachayim. Hilchos Brachos. Shaila, does he make a bracha on that? So it says in Shulchan Aruch that yes, he makes a bracha. That's, I think, Siftes. The Machaber Patzim says yes, he makes a bracha on that. In Sifches, the previous piece, the Machaber doesn't say, but there's a Ramah. The Ramah is quoting a Beis Yosef, right, which is a little curious, right? The Machaber of Shulchan Aruch, that is the Beis Yosef. There's a halacha that he wrote in the Beis Yosef, but then he left it out in the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah brings it in. And the Ramah writes that if the goyim come over to you and say, eat this chazer, or else we're going to kill you, you don't make a bracha. You eat it without a bracha. The Ramah writes this, and he quotes the Beis Yosef. So you're reading it, you know, Ramah quoting the Beis Yosef, so right away you're wondering, so why did the Beis Yosef say it? Why was it left out of Shulchan Aruch? The Magen Avraham says, I'll tell you why it's left out, and it should have been left out, and the Ramah is wrong for bringing it, because this is a stira to what it says in Siftes. In Siftes it says that you do make a bracha when you're eating to save your life. So, right, if you're eating because let's say you're a chayla on Yom Kippur, or somebody who needs bas v'chala for some reason to stay alive, we say that you make a bracha. So if you make a bracha on that, you should make a bracha on this also. So the Magen Avraham says, I would pass on that you do make a bracha. If the goyim say, eat this cheeseburger or else I'll kill you. So you say, and you make a bracha. And you take a bite. That's what the Magen Avraham says. But the Shulchan Aruch is not like that. The Ramah is not like that. What's pshat in these two contradictory psakim? In that if we take the Shulchan Aruch as it's written, the Ramah and the Mechaber, assuming both of them, so what we're coming away with is that if a person is eating to save his life from a choyli, he makes a bracha. If he's eating to save his life from an anas, he doesn't make a bracha. Zok the Mishnah Brura, Hu Asher Dibarnu. It's exactly this chiluk, this Minchas Chinuch. He doesn't quote any of these Mefarshim, but he says it's the exact same chiluk. When the goy is telling you, eat this or I'll kill you, so you're not, that's not your maisa, you're not really, there's no ruts in there to eat it. Someone else is making you do it. So then you don't make a bracha. Now that's not considered that you're eating. So if someone else is making you do it, you don't make a bracha. But when you're eating it to save your life from a chayli, that's no one else is making you do it. You're exercising your own volition. Yeah, and you're thanking Hashem for the food for sure, right? You're very grateful for the food in that case. But the Mishmaru's point is that there it's your own rutzen, it's your own decision. It was your initiative to take this food, and therefore with it you make a bracha on it.
And if the guy says make a bracha?
the guy should answer our name.